And the court will proceed to the fifth case of the day, Smith versus Castaway Family Diner. Ms. Hearn?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Anna Hearn, and I represent Cindy Smith in this matter. It is our position that the district court erred in granting summary judgment as a matter of law that Castaway's Diner is not an employer for purposes of Title VII. It is clear by the evidence designated by Ms. Smith that Castaway's employed 15 or more employees for 20 or more weeks and therefore should be considered an employer. The court erred on three aspects: procedurally, legally, and factually. Procedurally, it made credibility determinations, which it was not supposed to do, and in addition, it construed all the facts in the most favorable light of the moving party, Castaway's Diner, and in addition, it drew all the inferences in favor of the moving party.
You know, I was wondering why isn't Darden and its 16-factor test the authority we should look for? Because Walters is really about the number of days someone counts as an employee, not whether they are an employee in the first instance. And Darden gives us the test to make that determination. And I was wondering whether or not the Darden factors were argued in the district court.
The Darden factors were not argued in the district court. The factors that were raised by the defendant were the Clackamas factors, and stating that with respect to own and manage, which there all the evidence showed that Faust and Ricardo did not own the company.
But isn't our key issue here whether someone counts as an employee or not?
Yes. And what they were saying, and it is our position, that Faust and Ricardo were employees. And the reason being is, number one, Ricardo was receiving biweekly paychecks. He was
right.
Not.
So why didn't you rely on Darden? Neither party relied on Darden.
I do not know why we did not rely on Darden. I'll just be frank with you. But I believe by the facts, if any way you look at it, they were employees. By looking at, basically what the district court held is that every manager who manages a restaurant, general manager, would be an employee. So a manager at McDonald's would be an employer for Title VII purposes, and that's not what any of the cases hold. If you look at the facts of the case and the admissions to the EEOC with respect to Ricardo and Faust, Ms. Carol Gonzalez, who was the owner, she says, "I'm the sole proprietor. There's one woman who owns the restaurant, another woman who manages the restaurant. In addition, Ricardo, my husband, works in the kitchen full time." Now, that shows who actually controls that restaurant. And if there is a reasonable inference should be given to Ms. Smith that these two were employees. Anyone could have a title of a manager. I manage some of my staff in my office, but does that mean I'm an owner? No, I'm an associate. In addition to that, they made credibility determinations. One was the payroll information, 2002 payroll information, which was destructed by numerous computer failures. Now, the court in that stated, both parties note that, and this court acknowledges the uphill battle that the plaintiff S. faced in attempting to prove her prima facie case, because most of the defendant's business records and payroll records have been destroyed due to numerous computer errors. And as a result, neither party is able to produce sufficient evidence as to the number of employees in 2002. What the court did was made a credibility determination and failed to give Smith the inference as to how many employees that were employed. A reasonable inference could have been made to say, hey, you know, what's actually going on here? Why were these records really destroyed? In addition, there was so much contradictory evidence throughout that we have designated with respect to the EEOC admissions, in which I just told you about Faust and Ricardo. In addition to that, they made several admissions that there were additional employees named Mimo, by stating, it's on page 52 of the appendix, Mimo will be available by phone. He was one of the harassers, but he was not on the employee list. In addition, Louis the cook is now in Mexico. He was not on the employee list. I wonder why. Now, in addition, they provided an employee list with the begin dates and the end dates and the names of all its employees. If you take just that employee list, there were 15 or more employees for 45 weeks. Now, during discovery, Castaways provided that same employee list to Ms. Smith. In the response, and Ms. Gonzalez, the sole proprietor, swore under the penalties of perjury that the information was true and correct. The discovery deadline ended. It was not until they filed their partial motion for summary judgment that they said, you know, the information we gave to the EEOC in that employee list is wrong, disregarded. There's some typos in it. But if you look at the typos that they allege, they claim that Isaiah Smith and Kelly Belcher, it's page 39 of the appendix, were due to typos. They didn't give any other explanation. Even though they had all these numerous computer failures, they recall the end dates of their employment. But they didn't say anything about Helen Scott or Tapley. They didn't give any explanation as to why that should be changed. Now, the district court made a credibility determination on page 9 of its order when it stated, although it's unfortunate that the defendants did not, that this discrepancy did not apply earlier, it does not appear that the defendants acted in bad faith, attempting to correct an earlier mistake. This court cannot rely on faulty information when determining it had 15 or more employees, especially in a case as close as this. Well, that's not the standard. Bad faith's not the standard. What a reasonable jury could believe. And in addition, they completely ignore the rule of law that says an inconsistent statement may preclude summary judgment. And moreover, there's a case called Saperstein versus Hagar, which is 188 F3rd 856, which holds that, you know, when it's close enough and you have an affidavit from an interested party, you know, they should give credit to the moving party. They also, the non-moving party, sorry. They also misapply Clackamas, that is our position, which I have, because there's no evidence that they own the business. And in addition, the facts that we already discussed, they forgot to put, the court totally ignored the facts with respect to the additional paychecks that we show that these individuals actually worked longer, and there were individuals not on the employee list where there was actually evidence that they were actually employed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hearn. Mr. Vetney?
May it please the court. My name is Tom Vetney. I'm here today on behalf of Carol Gonzalez. Ms. Gonzalez runs a small restaurant in the small town of Knox, Indiana. The question for the court is, just how small is it? Is it small enough that the restaurant is immune from federal anti-discrimination claims? Or is it just big enough that Ms. Gonzalez has to fear being targeted by what this court has called in other cases the heavy artillery of federal anti-discrimination law? It is a small restaurant, Your Honors. It is too small to make her an employer under Title VII purposes. It's too small for two reasons. And those reasons turn on whether or not six individuals were properly included on a week-by-week employee tally prepared by the appellant.
So, in other words, is it your argument that even if we don't count Faust or Ricardo, there would still be four others?
Your Honor, if you don't count Faust or Ricardo, then we are still an employer. We have to also eliminate the other four employees who were improperly on the list. If all six are gone, then she is not an employer. If Faust or Ricardo are on the list, or the other four are on the list, then she is an employer for Title VII purposes. None of the six, though, should be on. Faust and Ricardo are not what the Supreme Court has called employers. They are more properly viewed as proprietors. This is a small, family-owned and operated business. Probably one of the most, it's a DBA. It is probably one of the most common forms of business enterprise in the country. Mrs. Gonzalez herself doesn't work at the restaurant on a full-time basis. She's a nurse. She works full-time in the healthcare industry. She leaves it to her mom, Ms. Faust, and her husband, Mr. Gonzalez, to run the place. They do.
What I'm having the problem with is that you seem to be saying that whenever a worker has a great deal of discretion or authority, then that individual is no longer an employee for Title VII purposes, even if that person meets many or most of the 16 Darden factors.
Your Honor.
And there isn't a case that says that, is there?
That's not what I'm saying, Your Honor. That's what the Supreme Court is saying in Clackamas. If Darden
was... Why would we apply the Clackamas test? Neither Faust nor Ricardo were partners or shareholders, as was the case in Clackamas. This is a sole proprietorship, which by definition has one owner and no partner. So Darden is the appropriate test here.
With respect, I disagree, Your Honor. The Supreme Court has said in Clackamas that the appropriate test in federal anti-discrimination cases such as this, the appropriate test is the six factors set out in Clackamas. Now, Darden, as you pointed out earlier, or as was pointed out earlier, wasn't briefed in the court below. If my memory serves, though, it had to do with who's an employee versus who's an independent contractor. This court has said before that you can be an employee for different purposes. I don't dispute the fact that in the strict agency sense, Faust and Ricardo are employees. But for purposes of Title VII, they are proprietors. They are the face of Castaways. They are they run the show. They are the people who make the decisions about policy, about procedure, that govern the restaurant.
You're not suggesting that they're independent contractors, are you?
I am not suggesting that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Not at all. What I am saying is, the Clackamas factors focus on the extent of control the enterprise has over the individual in question. In this case, the enterprise, the restaurant, exercises almost no control over these two individuals. They set their own hours. They set their own schedules. They hire and fire on their own authority, on their own discretion. They alter the policies and procedures to be followed by the employees.
Can you cite some authority for the notion that managers or supervisors don't count as employees?
Clackamas.
Clackamas, again, concerned a doctor who was a partner in a medical practice. And that decision outlined a special test for people who are partners, shareholders, directors. Neither Faust nor Ricardo fall into any of those categories.
And Your Honor,
Castaways is a sole proprietorship.
And Your Honor, there's no good reason why those factors shouldn't apply in this case as well. Again, the important Clackamas doesn't turn on whether or not the individual is a shareholder, a partner, or has some ownership interest in the enterprise. As Judge Flom pointed out for the court in the Solon case, it applies to any individual under scrutiny. In this case, they run the show. They have the control. There is no good reason why it shouldn't be applied to them. It doesn't turn on ownership. In fact, I would argue to the court that that the sixth factor in Clackamas deals with ownership. Ownership is only one of the things to be looked at. The sixth factor in the Clackamas is whether you share in the losses, the liabilities, or the profits. It's one of the six factors to be considered. In this case, the court examined everything in total and determined that based upon those factors, Ricardo and Faust were not employees. We would ask the court to uphold that decision in its entirety.
Let's just pretend for a minute that we think that Darden and its 16 factors are what governs here. What do you think we ought to do? Should we remand? What should we do if Darden is the test?
Your Honor, I'm afraid that I didn't brief Darden in connection with case with this case.
Neither party did.
Exactly. And it wasn't raised by the district court below, because I believe that obviously Clackamas is the more on-point case. And it's based on Clackamas that we're asking the court to affirm the decision of the district court. The other main argument, the other main point is whether or not these four additional employees should be included on the list. The only point I want to make on this issue, Your Honors, is that there really is no dispute of fact about these four individuals. The appellant is not saying that these four individuals are employees. She submitted an affidavit to the court. She identified everybody she worked with during the term of her employment at Castaways. Busboys, managers, maintenance people, everyone. None of these four people are on it. She has not since come forward after filing the affidavit and said, oh, yes, now I remember these four people were employees.
Just name the four. There's so many names in there.
Your Honor, it's mind-boggling. There's a lot of turnover in this business. The four employees are Isaiah Smith, Helen Scott, Heather Tapley, and Kelly Belcher.
And what will the record, show as to how they came to be on the employee list, mistakenly, apparently?
It was a mistake, Your Honor. That employee list was prepared in conjunction with the EEOC filings that were... the EEOC claim was filed in, I believe, January of 2004. During the process, we pointed out to the EEOC that Castaways doesn't have the requisite number of employees to be an employer for Title VII purposes. They asked for backup documentation on that. We didn't have it. Carol Gonzalez prepared the list, submitted it, fully thinking that it showed that she didn't have enough employees. It wasn't until the appellant prepared a week-by-week summary that we realized, oh, my gosh, these people weren't there for that long. That's what the state of the record is. It's a document that was prepared and sent to the EEOC, I believe even before the state court case was filed.
But what are the backup records that show that they were not employees for the required amount of time?
The affidavit of Carol Gonzalez herself, the affidavit of Phyllis Faust, and the affidavit of Bobby Frazier, corroborated by the affidavit of the appellant. The other backup documents that no one has referred to are the payroll checks. The appellant has produced page after page, literally hundreds of payroll checks for 2003. None of those employees are in those payroll checks for a period longer than what we're saying they were there. Take Isaiah Scott. If you comb through all of those payroll checks in the appendix, you won't see any payroll checks to Isaiah Scott. He wasn't there. It was a typographical error. It's regrettable. They happen. I found a typographical error on the cover of my brief, and I'm kicking myself over it. But they happen. For those reasons, Your Honor, we ask that...
Mr. Bentley, that's the name of somebody who there's no connection to the diner?
Isaiah Smith. He's one of the four employees at issue, Your Honor.
Well, perhaps I'm not tracking then on the payroll. So there were payroll stubs or...
Payroll checks in the appendix.
Yes. What was the point you were just making about that?
The point I was making, Your Honor, is that none of these four employees were employed for the length of time indicated in the employee list. Had they been, you would see their names in these payroll checks that were submitted by the plaintiff for some period of time beyond that which we're saying they were there, and they're not there. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Betty.
What's the mistake on your brief? United.
Yes.
Real briefly, Williams versus Banning, 72 F3rd 552, holds that a supervisor in their individual capacities do not fall within the Title VII's definition of an employer. It is our position that there's no proof of ownership just because he finally gets a biweekly paycheck or she has the authority to sign checks, but she never did. If you look at the checks, it's Carol Gonzalez who signs it, does not make them owners in that sense. In addition, the four other employees, even if you take Ricardo and Faust out of the picture, there was 41 weeks with 15 or more employees. And the individuals on the employee list had the beginning dates and the end dates of their employment. We submitted checks to show they actually worked longer than what they alleged in the affidavit with which they alleged the typos.
Ms. Hearn, does the record reflect the physical size of this establishment or the hours of its operation?
Physical size or...
Yeah. To support your position about... that more than one person needs to operate it. I'm just trying to see if the record, is there anything in the record to suggest the number, to support the theory that there are a sufficient number of employees?
No, there was not. However, they had the EEOC admissions with respect to one woman manages the restaurant and another one owns it. In addition, my husband, Ricardo, works in the kitchen on a full-time basis. That doesn't sound like he has control of the entity. Thank you.
Thanks.
Can I just...
Surely.
I just want to follow up. Does the record tell us how many seats the restaurant has?
No, but it does have a... It does not. It has a list of, if you do every scenario possible under the sun, how many employees... Because there's four or five different scenarios of how many employees work during those weeks.
How many shifts? Does the record tell us how many shifts?
No, it did not. We were only given limited discovery, like five interrogatories and some requests for production documents, so we had to use our time wisely.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.